Good morning. Good to see everybody this morning. What is the last thing that a mother does if she is going to leave her children at home for an extended period of time? Well, if our house is any indication of what a normal mother would do, there are two steps that take place. The first step is the mother is going to write down the instructions for the children and reiterate them several times and make sure that the children understand, and then also give them to whoever is going to be taking care of those children for that period of time. The second step is to say the final goodbyes and once again reiterate the instructions and demand good behavior and obedience. And step three is to repeat step two until drug away or until there is a confidence that the children understand that they need to behave and be obedient. This is similar to what we find in the book of Deuteronomy. At the very end of the book of Deuteronomy, we see that Moses is getting ready to die and to pass on the leadership of the nation of Israel to his young protege. Young is very used very loosely there. Compared to 120, 80 is young, right? But anyway, he's going to pass on his leadership to his protege, Joshua. And so we're going to spend just a little bit of time together in the book of Deuteronomy. But before we get there, I want to set the stage a little bit by explaining some things about the book of Deuteronomy. After all, this is the final book of the five that Moses wrote. This is the final book of the Torah, the law that the people of Israel were given. It was a retelling and a restating, maybe even a rephrasing of the laws of God for a new generation of the nation of Israel. You see, Moses had given, or God had given the law to the nation of Israel through Moses at Mount Sinai, but if you remember back several weeks ago, we looked at the fact that the nation of Israel at that point in time, they sent the 12 spies in, but they refused to go into the promised land. And so some things have been slightly modified as Moses addresses this generation because of the things that have taken place in the last 40 years. In the last 40 years, they have done their share of grumbling. They've complained some. They have disrespected Moses, Aaron, and God. Probably we should do that, God, Moses, and Aaron. They built the golden calf. There is the incident at Peor that has taken place as the Moabites and the Midianites have seduced Israel into Baal worship and sexual sins. And then there was the ultimate, the refusal to trust God to bring them into the promised land, and thus the subsequent deaths of their parents, grandparents, and some of them brothers and even sisters. You see, all of these things have taken place, and so Moses is telling this new generation what the laws of God are and how they're supposed to live. But just like any good parent, you know that sometimes those have to be modified just slightly because of the situations. And so Deuteronomy is a retelling of the law for the new generation. We come to the end of the book of Deuteronomy, and Moses, it says, has written all of the words of God that God gave him for the people of Israel. and he has verbally recited or reiterated everything to them, so they have heard the law. And we, now some 3,500 years later, 3,400 years later, get to read the final words, or some of the final words of the of Moses to Israel. We're going to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 31 this morning. If you have a Bible, turn there. If you don't, there are Bibles in the pews in front of you, or on the bottom of the chairs there in front of you. You might have to slide up or down the pew a little bit to find one, but they're there. Or if you've got an electronic device, as long as you don't start playing games. Because I can tell sometimes if you're playing games. Deuteronomy chapter 19, or chapter 31, beginning at verse 19, these are the words of God to Moses, or excuse me, yeah, God to Moses. He says, "Now write down this song and teach it to the Israelites and have them sing it, so that they may be witnesses for me against them. When I have brought them into the land flowing with milk and honey, the land I promised on oath to their ancestors, and when they eat their fill and thrive, they will turn to other gods and worship them, rejecting me and breaking my covenant. And when many disasters and calamities come on them, this song will testify against them, because it will not be forgotten by their descendants. I know that they are disposed to do, or what they are disposed to do, even before I bring them into the land I promised them on oath." So Moses wrote down this song that day and taught it to the Israelites. Now, I would like you to go home and read this song later today. We don't have time to look through it all this morning, so I'm going to skip the song of Moses and go to chapter 32 and verse 44 this morning. It says, "Moses came with Joshua, son of Nun, and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people. When Moses finished reciting all these words to Israel, he said to them, 'Take to heart all the words I have solemnly declared to you this day, so that you may command your children to obey carefully all the words of this law. They are not just idle words for you, they are your life. By them you will live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to possess.'" Moses, well, God, understood that there are certain dangers that come with prosperity. There are certain dangers that come with blessing. And he wanted the people to be prepared to deal with them. He wanted them to know how to deal with the dangers of prosperity. And so through Moses, he gives them these words. Through Moses, he tells them these things that become the warning about the dangers of prosperity. You see, we often don't think of it that way. We think of prosperity and blessing as something beautiful, something wonderful, something good. And blessing and prosperity really are, in and of themselves, they are good things. The problem is there are some dangers that are inherent to having blessings. There are some dangers that come naturally with prosperity in this fallen world that we live in. The first of those is comfort. Comfort comes with prosperity, and prosperity and comfort comes with blessing. The problem with comfort is we get used to comfort. And comfort, well, prosperity breeds comfort. When you become prosperous, when you become blessed, when you begin to enjoy the benefits of prosperity and blessing, one of the first things that we all do naturally is we move towards comfort. And I think that is natural. Because you look back at Genesis chapter 1, and you look at Genesis chapter 2, and you look at Genesis chapter 3, and what you find is that though we were created to work, we were created to do physical labor, we were created to do mental labor, we were created to be creative and beneficial for ourselves and for the world around us. We were created to work, but we were created for prosperity. We were created for blessings that God had bestowed upon us and would continue to bestow upon His people until Adam and Eve took of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, and everything changed. Everything was put out of order. We chose death over life. We chose knowledge over relationship. And now when prosperity and blessing come, we come to the point where we naturally are supposed to be comfortable and have comfort, but we take comfort too far. We take comfort that's supposed to come from doing a job and doing it well, and we let comfort breed complacency. And God told the people of Israel that when they came into the land, He was going to give them houses and vineyards that they did not plant and did not build, and they would enjoy the fruit of somebody else's labor. And the prosperity would bring comfort, but He warned them that comfort would bring complacency. Have you noticed that the more comfortable you get, the more complacent you can become? You become prosperous, and suddenly you stop putting as much effort into the work and you start putting effort into the enjoyment. Prosperity breeds comfort, and comfort breeds complacency. And God warns us that complacency breeds a desire for more comfort. Complacency, when we become complacent, we start looking for more and more levels of comfort. It suddenly isn't enough to have a comfortable chair. You have to have the most comfortable chair. It's not enough to have a good meal. You have to have the best meal possible. Complacency breeds the desire for more comfort and boredom. Not only do we seek after more comfort, but we become bored with what we have. And we search for new entertainment and new measures of pleasure, and we forget what it is that we really have, and we start searching for more. And God was warning the people of Israel as they went into the promised land that yes, they were going to be blessed, and yes, they were going to have prosperity, but they had to be careful about letting comfort become a distraction. He also warned them that not only was comfort a problem, but the other side of this issue, one of the other great dangers with prosperity and blessing, is forgetfulness. We often talk about people getting old and forgetful. The problem is we don't have to get old. You don't have to age to get forgetful. You see, one of the great causes of forgetfulness is prosperity or blessing. You see, we forget how it is that we got where we are. And God was warning the nation of Israel, and if you read through the Song of Moses, you find over and over again what He's warning them against is about forgetting how they got to where they were. Throughout the pages of Scripture, God tells the people of Israel several times, you didn't get here because you were a great nation. You didn't get here because you were a mighty army. You didn't get here because you were the best people on earth. You didn't get here because of yourselves. You got here because I made a promise to Abraham. You got here because I am faithful to keep my promises. And I brought you here. And I prospered you. The problem is, as we begin to get prosperous, we begin to get blessed, and we forgot how it is we've gotten what we got. You know, we're quick to pray. We're quick to ask God to help us in times of need. We're quick to ask God to give us wisdom, to give us guidance, to give us direction. Sometimes prosperity makes us forgetful, and we forget to thank God for what it is that He's done. And God was warning the nation of Israel that they were going to get forgetful. They were going to forget how they got there. They were going to forget who provided for them. You know, it's quite natural when we begin to do well and we begin to see the blessings that God is bestowing on us to start looking at everything we've done to get what we've got. Now, I'm not going to say we shouldn't work hard. I'm not going to say that we shouldn't put our minds and our energy and our efforts into doing things that are going to create and provide for ourselves. But we have to remember, just like the Israelites, they were being called to remember that God had provided for them. They didn't build the houses they were going to live in. They didn't plant the crops that they were going to eat of. They didn't plant the vineyards or the olive trees that they were going to use for their sustenance for the next 1,500 years as the nation of Israel. In fact, they didn't provide anything for themselves. God had provided for them. You go back to the tabernacle, the building of the tabernacle, and you see that they didn't provide the needs for the place to worship God. God had provided those for them as they took from the bounty of the Egyptians as they left Egypt. God provided for the people. The problem with prosperity is we often forget what God has provided for us. Prosperity also makes us forget who it is or what it is that is deserving of our worship. And I said that in that way specifically because it's not what is worthy of our worship, it is who is. But oftentimes we get that confused, and instead of who is worthy of our worship, we begin to look at what is worthy. And we begin to look at things, and we begin to give things the worship that is only due to God. Sometimes we look at who and we get the wrong who. We begin to think that we're worthy of worship. That we are the ones who deserve all of our praise and our glory and honor. You see, the thing is forgetfulness makes it easy. It becomes easy to take personal credit for where we are and what we have and what we've accomplished. And we begin to worship at the idol of I or me. We begin to bow down to ourselves and give ourselves the praise and the glory and the honor for the things that we've done, whether it's individually or nationally. We begin to think that we are the ones providing when actually God says, I am the only one. I am God. There is no other. What Ken read, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. You see, we try to take personal credit because we begin to think we are the ones who've done certain things for ourselves. Or we can look at the Israelites and the things that they began to worship, or the other nations around them, or even into our own society today. And it becomes easy to give credit to the wrong things because we become forgetful of what God has done for us. And so you look at the nations around Israel, and they gave credit to the rain or the god of the thunderstorms, and they worshipped the Baals and the Ashtaroths. They worshipped the god of the rain and the storms. They worshipped the gods that they believed brought the fertility to the ground that they would plant their crops in, instead of giving credit to the God who created the rain and created the earth. They gave credit to the rain. They gave credit to the sun. They bowed down and they worshiped the sun gods. Different names, different places, different understandings of what the sun was really doing, but they worshiped the sun god, the sun that rises in the east and sets in the west every day without fail. They began to worship the sun that gives its light. And you know, today, even more than ever, we understand the benefits and the blessings of the sun because, well, science has taught us about photosynthesis, and we understand the dangers and the blessings of the sun. While you can have a nice sun-tanned skin and look good, we also understand the dangers of looking red like a lobster and the damage that we do to our skin when we get sunburned. We understand the blessing of the sun that provides the heat that helps the crops grow, but we understand that same sun can bring a drought if there isn't any rain. And we can worship the sun. The Israelites worshiped the fertility gods, or later wood, and the nations around them did in several different ways and different means. They would try to encourage, especially right around Israel, Baal to cohabitate with the Ashtaroth, and therefore they believed that if that happened, that the ground would be productive, that their wombs would be productive, that their cattle and their sheep would be productive. The thing is God said, I will do all of that for you. But the Israelites and those around them quickly, you see, it was easy for them to give credit to the wrong thing. They forgot that God had provided for them. We'll see as we go on through the story. The nations around them didn't understand that God was providing those things, and so they worshiped the Baals and the Ashtaroths. It can become too easy to give credit to the government. To look at the way that government is structured or the people that are leading the government and say they're the ones bringing the blessings. And while they may be designed and may be put in place in ways that help to bring some blessings, they're not the ones who bring the blessings. Or what about the economy? We look at our life and we think that the economy is bringing us great blessings. Or education. If we just get enough education, the blessings will be there. We look to modern practices for different things and say, you know, the way we do things now are so much better than we've done them in the past, and that brings some great blessings. And while there may be some truth to that in some areas, there are other things that we can't even begin to measure up. When was the last time you saw somebody build a pyramid the way the Egyptians did? Do you even know how the Egyptians built those pyramids? Or when was the last time you drove down a 2,000-year-old road without potholes? But yet you can go to places where the Romans and the Greeks were able to pour cement that is better than what we drive on today. They found ways to pour it underwater and do great things with it. We rely on a lot of their technology. We say that today our modern way of doing things are so much better, but are they really? Are they always? You see, the thing is that all good things, those are all good things. But when a good things become an ultimate thing, it becomes a god. And good things never make good gods. They are always extremely demanding and very petty. When we make a god in our image, when we make a god that likes the things we like and hates the things we hate, it is very demanding of us. And it is very petty. And we forget that. And it is easy to give credit to the wrong things because blessing and prosperity bring forgetfulness. Long before old age will bring forgetfulness, blessings and prosperity will do it for you.